The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So first, I just have one little announcement, which is that on Friday, we will have, after this session, a community meeting on Zoom. And the link for that will appear on the IMC website in the What's New section, and it'll be on the calendar also. And I'll be there for any questions you might have, and we'll have time for some breakout groups also. So that's Friday if you're interested. One time, Gil was on a long retreat during his time in Asia, and he had an insight about mindfulness. Sometimes these things don't sound maybe as profound when spoken out of context, but his insight was that we can be mindful of anything. There's nothing that can't be known in awareness. And this is really good news. It's really good news. So we talked yesterday about practicing to extend our mindfulness into broader realms of our life. And the focus was about how mindfulness counteracts what are called the five cords of sensual pleasure, which also includes aversion. So today, we're going to go deeper into this territory that mindfulness can penetrate. So even beyond the kind of more everyday situations where we have tempting sense pleasures or challenging emotions, there is the great challenge that all humans face of aging and illness and death. And this too is a realm for mindfulness. So the Buddha gave some brilliant teachings on mindfulness in relation, in particular, to death or terminal illness. And I hope you're not reaching for the off button at this moment. Please stay if you can. I'll be sharing some stories around this, including something that the Buddha said as his own death was approaching. So many suttas talk about mindfulness at the time of death, as well as mindfulness being a refuge in general in times of challenge. So both of those are today's theme: mindfulness at the time of death and mindfulness as a genuine refuge for us. When the Buddha was giving meditation instructions to his son, Rahula, one thing that he taught him was mindfulness of breathing. And in the discourse where he does that, he says to Rahula, "When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, even the final in-breaths and out-breaths are known as they cease, not unknown." So it's quite powerful. He's saying that, in other words, you know, we can die mindfully just through the basic practice of mindfulness of breathing, which I know many of us have done at least to some degree. So continuing with that goes all the way to being mindful up to the last moments, the last breaths. So mindfulness is a reliable practice for us in ways that some other practices may not be. The monk Asaji became agitated around the time of death because he was a practitioner mostly of concentration, and he found that he could not concentrate his mind when he was enduring a terminal illness. And so he expressed this concern to the Buddha. He said, "I think I'm slipping back because I can't get concentrated." And the Buddha pointed him toward letting go of attachment, even to meditative states. And he said, "Just be mindful." He didn't quite say it that way, but he pointed out the reliability of simply knowing We can be aware of how we are. Mindfulness is always possible. Being aware is very simple. As Ajahn Sumedho says, and this is very practical advice for any time, right now it's like this. I've practiced that myself sometimes, just realize right now it's like this. And it brings the mind right back, right to a simple place. And we could do that all the way up to the moment of death. So then, another story. One time, the Buddha visited the sick ward, according to the discourse, place where the monastics who were sick were staying. And he said to the monks there, a person should await their time mindful and clearly comprehending. This is our instruction to you. And how is a person mindful? And then he goes on to name the four establishments of mindfulness, exactly using the same language that they're stated in the Satipatthana Sutta. So here a person is mindful of the body, in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, and so forth. So it's interesting that he points out that this is what should come to mind as we are, even when we're sick, even when we're in the hospital, essentially. So then, which aspects of Satipatthana might be particularly relevant for someone who's in a state like that? And in one teaching, the Buddha points particularly toward the contemplation of feeling tone. So you might remember, Gil has been going through all the Satipatthanas, and when he spoke earlier in the series, feeling tone is the second foundation of mindfulness. And it's about whether experience is pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So it's a very kind of basic response that we have to experience. And so that means it can be done without much mental effort to just know whether something is pleasant or unpleasant, or neither. Is something the mind can know every moment. And it's a powerful practice because it directly prevents the mind from, or at least reduces the chances that the mind will move into craving or aversion. So if we just know something with the label, this is pleasant, we're much less likely to mindlessly go on into thinking, how can I get more of this? I really need this, etc. Or if it's unpleasant, we can just stop there and not get into a long thought trail about how horrible it is and how we wish it would end, which the mind would otherwise naturally do. So this is definitely relevant for dying. We don't want to keep our mind in a prolonged state of aversion. And then the suttas also very much encourage the wisdom reflection that all feeling tones are impermanent. That was what we looked at in the meditation. That was more just impermanence of sensations. So that means it's not fruitful to grasp onto them or push them away. So reflection on impermanence is a major theme in the, as you might guess, in the teachings about death. So again, even just the simple practice of sitting and noticing changing sounds, changing body sensations in our current state is something that will fortify the mind and prepare it for something that's coming later. So all of our current practice is actually building up strength in the mind. I volunteered in a hospice for a while, and I noticed that there was a big difference between the people who became overwhelmed by regret or pain or the general indignity of dying compared with those who could stay present and could somehow keep their mind in a more wholesome place. I guess to be clear, I'll say that there is not just one perfect way to die, the proverbial good death. However you die is going to be fine, but it is good to at least aim the mind toward mindfulness. And It can help in particular to keep feeling tone in mind. So having this method of avoiding falling into craving and aversion really serves as a refuge for the mind and the heart. So there's again this sense, like we talked about yesterday, that when the mind is mindful, we're safe, we're protected in a sense. So I wanted to look now at some passages from the sutta that deals with the death of the Buddha. So that's the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. And it chronicles the last few months of the Buddha's life. It's a very long sutta that kind of goes through everything he was doing in his travels and his teachings all the way up to the time of his death. And it includes these famous lines that some of you have probably heard. So he says, "Monks, you should live as islands unto yourselves, being your own refuge with no other refuge. You should live with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as your refuge, with no other refuge." And many people have only heard that much, and that alone is good advice for dying, which we will be doing alone, even if there are people with us. Of course, no one is coming along with us in that transition. But I want to highlight today, because of this series, what comes after those famous lines. So the Buddha continues, "And how does a person live as an island unto themselves, being their own refuge, and with the Dhamma as an island, as a refuge? Here, a person abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having set aside covetousness and grief for the world. A person abides contemplating feeling as feeling," and so on. You may recognize the lines again, straight from the Satipatthana Sutta, same language. So the Buddha says that cultivating the four establishments of mindfulness is how we can be a refuge for ourselves and how we can also take the Dharma as our refuge. And he thought that was important enough that he conveyed it clearly and strongly, quite close to the time of his own death. He was thinking about what to pass on to people. So one more story, this one modern. And this is something I heard from a friend of mine who trained as a monk in Asia. And he tells the story of an abbot at an Asian monastery who was dying. So this is recently during the 20th century. And the abbot summoned his senior monk, saying that he wants to give him a final gift. And the monk was wondering, what's that going to be? And so he came to the abbot, and the abbot took the monk's hand and he folded down four of his fingers. And he just held his hand like that, the monk's hand. And he said, "The four foundations of mindfulness are my gift to you as I pass on." So these are some lines from Bhikkhu Anālayo's book on mindfully facing disease and death. Suppose one has suddenly become seriously ill and is in pain, physically unable to sit in formal meditation or just be quietly by oneself, perhaps even being close to passing away. What to do? The one thing to rely on in such a situation is mindfulness. From early Buddhist meditation to modern day clinical pain relief, mindfulness is what empowers one to face disease and death. After all, we might say, what's the alternative? So mindfulness is valuable even as we approach death, the great challenge for humans. And so it might be that at this point you're starting to get a sense of the real strength and power of mindfulness. It's very powerful. So we started just a couple days ago by talking about an almost passive guarding of the sense doors. But mindfulness has a different dimension also, where it can step forward and meet very difficult situations. So that's the direction that we're going to go next. Tomorrow I'll talk about the strength of mindfulness and some of the wonderful images that go with that. It can be quite inspiring. So thank you.